Hello, everyone. Welcome to Zeros TV and another episode of The Chopping Block. I'm joined today by Tim Murray of J Capital Research. Tim, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Max. Thanks for having me on your program.
All right. So who's up on The Chopping Block today?
Today, we've got Vulcan Energy Resources. The ticker is VUL on the ASX.
Okay. And what do they claim to do?
So Vulcan is a great story stock. They claim to do two things. One, they claim that they can generate alternative energy using geothermal power and use the same brine that operates that geothermal power to extract lithium in a zero carbon format. We're all going into a future that will be powered by alternative energy and using electric cars, which need lithium batteries. So this is two good things for one. You get alternative energy and you get green lithium.
Well, that's why it's a great story, but why do you think it's a great short?
Well, this is a moonshot doing this sort of project. There are three key reasons why this project will struggle to ever make a profit. One is the flow rate. That means the amount of energy and lithium available to the project is assumed to be higher than we expect it actually will be. The second is the recovery rate of lithium from the brine, and that means the amount of lithium you'll take out of the brine as it passes through the system. We believe that is also too high. And the third issue is community opposition. In the Upper Rhine of Germany, where this project is located, the local people have only risk and no reward. And geothermal projects create seismic activity, and local people do not like that.
Okay, well, on top of that, I mean, I got a chance to read your report, which will be going out alongside this video. It seems like management is also a concern for you.
So you have to ask yourself, why haven't management told you about community opposition to similar projects in the area? That's a real risk that they should have raised. But more to the point, these assumptions, particularly the flow rate that we just mentioned, in the pre-feasibility study, they use companies that they owned themselves or later acquired in order to put those assumptions into the project. Additionally, one of the key management was given performance shares to produce a positive pre-feasibility study. He then stepped down as a director, so he wouldn't have to report the fact that he sold them all.
And you talked about the pre-feasibility study a few times there. For people who don't know what that is, can we maybe define that briefly?
Sure. Look, a pre-feasibility study from a mining company is where you've worked out the method you're going to use to exploit the resource, and you do an economic model based on reasonable assumptions. Pre-feasibility is sort of low confidence. The next thing you do is a feasibility study with higher confidence. When Vulcan put out the pre-feasibility study, their share price doubled. So it is critical to how investors perceive this project.
Okay, well, let's break down some of those assumptions that came through in the pre-feasibility study. Let's start with the flow rate. You mentioned that it's higher than what is standard in other projects in the region by a significant measure.
Yes. So flow rate, and just to be clear, flow rate dominates the amount of energy available. So if you think of hot water coming up into the turbines, then that's the amount of hot water that flows through that turbine determines how much energy is available. And equally, the amount of lithium that can be extracted depends on how it flows through the lithium extraction process. And flow is measured in liters per second. Now, Vulcan has assumed that they can achieve between 100 liters per second and 120 liters per second. We think it's more likely they'll be achieving 70 liters per second. Why is that? Well, there are already several geothermal projects in the Upper Rhine, and they range from approximately 8 litres per second to 80 litres per second. None of them are operating at the rate of 100 litres per second or 120 litres per second. And it's really important to note that scientists know that you can't predict the flow rate of a well until you drill it. It's not like an oil well or something like that. These aquifers have their own characteristics. So you won't know what the flow rate will be until you drill down. And there have been plenty of projects that after drilling, the flow rate was too low to continue. There was Cronenberg back in the 80s, which was 8 liters per second. But then there was projects like Gros Garau, which were very low, like 30 liters per second, and they couldn't continue.
So where are they even getting this 100 to 120 number if it doesn't match up with what has been found in the area before and there's no scientific way to predict it?
So that assumption has come from two consultants used in the pre-feasibility study. One is a company called GEC Co., and that's owned by a guy called Thorsten Wiemann. And he became the COO of Vulcan 2 weeks after the pre-feasibility study came out. And his company, which was loss-making, we believe, was acquired 1 month later.
Acquired by Vulcan, though, right?
Acquired by Vulcan.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine that there wasn't some conversation going on during the preparation of the pre-feasibility study where they didn't mention he might become the COO 2 weeks later or they'd acquire his company within 1 month. The other company that was important in providing the assumption on flow rate is a company called GOT. GOT is owned by the co-founder and at the time managing director of Vulcan, Horst Kreuter. That company was also acquired by Vulcan 3 months after the PFS.
Well, there are some things that companies that are looking to increase their flow rate can do. I think the word they use is stimulate. Can we talk a little bit about what that means, why they're touting it, but why you think that that's probably not what's going to happen here?
Yeah, so there are methods to increase flow rate. And it's a process similar to, well, it is hydraulic fracturing or fracking, as you call it in the States. And that's because you can pump liquids down into the ground to further fracture the rock to make it more permeable and make the flow increase. The problem with that is it causes seismic activity. Seismic activity causes community opposition.
All right. And what is the history of community opposition in this area to similar projects which have resulted in seismic activity?
Almost every project in the Upper Rhine has had delays or has been halted from community opposition. Just as recently as the beginning of this year, a project in Vendenheim, which is about 5 kilometres from the Vulcan concession area, was shut down because of seismic activity. But it's been happening over that project had already invested 100 million euros before it was shut down. There's also another project in Brule in 2013. They drilled one hole, and before they could drill the second, community opposition shut the project down.
Okay, so how is the company addressing this? I know a lot of the other companies in the area, they have community outreach. They're interacting with the community. Whether it's successful or not, at least they're trying to do something here. Has Vulcan done anything to mitigate this risk?
Yes, so we had investigators visit the Upper Rhine, both the French side and the German side, and we only found one person who was aware of potential community outreach in the future of Vulcan. They haven't done anything to date. Most projects in this area, from the inception of the project through to getting permits, they're out doing community consultation. If you want to bring the community along with you, you have to start early and you have to be very open in your communications. But I think another thing that's really important to point out to you is that if a community is not getting a benefit from geothermal activity, projects like this, why are they going to support it anyway? It's all risk for them with no upside. And what some projects have done is use the geothermal power for district heating, which brings a direct benefit to the local community. Rittershofen, on the French side of the Upper Rhine, has done that, and it has a much better community acceptance and is more profitable as a result.
So why aren't they going into heating then?
So heating's not so simple. First of all, you need a distribution system, and where Vulcan doesn't plan to do it. But if they did plan to do it, they'd need to have a district heating system or convince a local government to build it or build it themselves. They're not cheap. They cost about €1,000 per meter to install. And nobody's going to spend that sort of money until the well is proven. So you have to build it and you have to start operating it and show that it's operating well before any community is going to invest in that.
Okay, well, let's get into one of the things that would be necessary for them to achieve the sort of profitability or just economics that would allow for something like that to advance to that stage, which is the lithium side of it. You mentioned there's really two aspects of the business here. What are they doing in terms of extracting lithium from this brine?
So it's important to point out that no one has been able to commercially extract lithium from geothermal brines. It's been a project that companies have been working on for decades. Many, like Symbol in the US, has already failed. Vulcan and others will point to the fact that they've done lab tests and shown that they can get 90% recovery rates of lithium from brine using the concentration of brine available in the Upper Rhine. But the thing is, they're just doing that in lab conditions. Vulcan always likes to point out that Levent, a company that has solar brines in Chile, has been using a method called direct lithium extraction, which is what they plan to use, for several decades. But these aren't comparable projects. The project in Chile has seven times the concentration of lithium in the brine. They pre-concentrate it before they extract it, and it's still brine, it's not moving. In a geothermal brine, you'll need to extract lithium when the brine is at 65 degrees under 30 bars of pressure and moving at probably 70 liters per second. So just because somebody does a lab test and can extract it, it's completely different to the commercial proposition of actually extracting lithium from a brine in an operating plant.
Okay, well, even if they are able to get some of that, their assumptions seem a little high relative to what other people have been able to do, because there are people extracting it, just not commercially viable at this moment in time. So can we talk about what their recovery rate that they're assuming is compared to those other people who are doing it, but yet still not making any money?
So ENBW, or Energie Baden-Württemberg, the main energy producer in the region, has been operating a geothermal power plant in Bruchsal for quite a number of years now. They also have a pilot project to extract lithium. And they also did lab tests that had a 90% recovery rate. They are assuming that under operating conditions, they'll have a recovery rate of 70%. So that's a very large difference between what Vulcan is estimating and what ENBW is estimating. It's unrealistic to expect the conditions in the lab will be the same as operations, which is what Vulcan has done. If you add these two things together, the flow rate being unrealistically high and the recovery rate being unrealistically high. So let's take the flow rate down from between 100 and 120 down to 70 liters. And let's take the recovery rate from 90 down to 70. If you combine those two things together, the amount of lithium you can extract from this project is half of what they claim. And that will definitely sink the project commercially.
Well, there's some reasons why you don't trust these assumptions. We alluded to some of the issues around management before, but I don't think we got the full picture. The management team that you're talking about doesn't have a great history of following through on these types of promises in the past.
Yeah, so the co-founder of Vulcan, Horst Kreuter, who is from this region, he's been involved in geothermal projects for decades. His earliest project around 2003 was in Offenbach, and that failed. I remember at the time reading press clippings, he said he was going to pave the Upper Rhine with geothermal projects. Well, that project failed. The drill got stuck in the hole. He again was involved in a project in Gros Garau in 2016. And after they drilled that hole, the flow rate was not enough to make it viable as a project. Now, that's a big difference in timing. Back in the early days, they were probably using two-dimensional seismic data. Now they can use 3D seismic data. And a lot of people, including Vulcan's pre-feasibility study, will say, we've got such good tools now to identify where we can drill and what the conditions are like. The reality is 3D seismic helps you, but it doesn't eliminate risk, as we saw in Gros Garau, where Hoyt-Croyter was. And these are the reasons why we need to be cautious in accepting what management are telling us.
Okay. Well, there's also a discrepancy between what management is telling potential investors and what they told the German government. I think that that's also very important to highlight, what they gave to the officials and what they gave to the people who they were trying to raise money from.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I mentioned that GEC Co. Was one of the key consultants for the PFS. The COO of Vulcan, who was the CEO of GEC Co., Thorsten Wiemann, he wrote a report for the German government in 2019. And at that time, he concluded that the risks involved in geothermal projects were not enough for the rewards that were possible. Basically, he said, they're not economically viable. He was very clear on that point. And this is the same person who then, a few years later, in the PFS for Vulcan, has said, well, not only is the geothermal power viable, it's going to be highly profitable.
Okay, and we talk a little bit about this technology that they claim they have, which maybe could be the reason why you could see a flip-flop in this. Can we talk a little bit about the black box nature of their technology and how little they've told us about these new techniques or new technologies that maybe could make this work?
So direct lithium extraction is a method that just about anybody who's trying to extract lithium from brine is experimenting with. But there are different ways of doing it. It's not clear what Vulcan is planning to do. Other projects like the ENBW one, they've said it quite clearly what they're using. They're using an absorbent. So think of it like the brine passing through a sponge and the lithium sticks to the sponge. Then you pull out the sponge, you wash it in water and the lithium drops off. That's what ENBW is planning to do. And they're using magnesium oxide in order to do that. But we don't know what Vulcan's planning to use. They sort of allude to the fact that they might be using an absorbent, but what absorbent? We don't know. It's a black box. And if they're claiming to have recovery rates of 90%, they should outline what technology they're using to achieve that.
So I think there are a few terms that we might need to define here, greenfield and brownfield. But you highlight that as one of the big concerns here and the flipping from what was supposed to be a greenfield project to what is very clearly a brownfield project.
Yeah, so greenfield means you walk out into one of those beautiful fields in the Upper Rhine and you go, this is a great spot for us to put a geothermal plant. You get the drilling rigs in, you drill down, you build a well, and you build a power plant and a lithium extraction plant around that. You need to get the permits to do all of those things. Brownfield means you go to somebody who's got a geothermal power plant and you say, hey, can I buy that? And then you adapt it in order to do direct lithium extraction. What Vulcan did in their pre-feasibility study is they outlined an entirely greenfield investment. And that means we haven't drilled any holes, so we don't know what the flow rates are, but we can assume what those flow rates are. And they've assumed them significantly higher than anybody else has achieved in the area. Now, in the past, well, when they did this acquisition, they acquired an already operating plant. It's a brownfield operation, and they will adapt that so that they can extract lithium. Now, this is interesting because they had a plan before the PFS where they would have brownfield and greenfield, but then they dropped that when they did the PFS. It was entirely greenfield. Now they've gone back to a brownfield investment. And what's really interesting about that is they haven't said who they're acquiring, although I can guess it's probably Insheim, where they have a cooperation there and where the flow rate is between 60 and 70 litres per second. But why didn't they include the brownfield in the PFS? It's because the parameters are known. That flow rate is known. And it's quite easy to show that it will not be profitable because of those parameters. So the fact that they're flip-flop, combination of brownfield, greenfield, then taking greenfield to the market, then after that has been published, after the share price has popped, they go and raise money for a brownfield acquisition. They didn't tell us who it was. They didn't tell any of the parameters. They didn't tell us anything about the projected profitability of that brownfield site.
Well, Tim, you make a strong case, but before I let you go, I'd love to have you go through and summarize all those points we just walked through.
Sure. So number one, they've assumed a flow rate which is significantly higher than what we expect they'll achieve. They've assumed a recovery rate, again, significantly higher than what they will be likely to achieve under operating conditions. Third, the project may never get off the ground because of community opposition. And fourth, management, it's hard to trust what they say.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for coming on the Chopping Block. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks, Max. It's been a pleasure.